Welcome to this week's edition of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and with me in the studio today, we have Ted, Steve, and Candace, none of whom need an extensive introduction because they've been here before, at least once or twice.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
What's up, Lisa?
It's Easter week. Yay.
Also known as Holy Week. For those of us a little opposed to the term Easter, I should say.
Why are you opposed to the term Easter?
Because its roots are in this goddess of fertility, Ishtar. And, you know, the rabbits, the chocolate, the eggs, all these fertility symbols. And
the spring savings events.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
So I prefer Holy Week and Resurrection Day.
Ted, it's all about balancing the sacred and profane. Okay? Everyone can do it. Speaking of profane, I'm just going
to
tell you that
this
morning...
Here's a little less profanity and a little more sacredness.
Well, you know, we'll move. You know, Friday you can be more profane, and then as you move into Sunday, then it's like, woo, praise. But no, okay, speaking of profanity, this morning as I was coming out of Starbucks getting my beverage, there was a Tahoe parked next to me that I could not even get into my door. Like, it was so, it was the closest.
I'm sure it was a compact spot.
It was a compact spot. There was a Tahoe in front of me, and you know that it was only, like, one person in the Tahoe, which is pretty much, you know, the standard for Colorado for one person to drive.
Right.
Okay, so I couldn't even get into my car, so I had to go to the passenger door and climb into my car through the passenger door in a skirt and tall boots, mind you.
Is it an automatic or stick shift?
Mine is an automatic.
Oh, good thing.
Yeah. But hello, I had to climb over a bunch of stuff that I had in the seat. Anyway, so that's the profane. So there are a few things that this Holy Week, and as we move into the weekend, that I'm going to have to put at the foot of the cross, which I just have to do daily anyway because I have issues. But yeah, I'm gonna have to put that down there because I was really riled up.
You could have just waited and introduced yourself and witnessed to the person driving the Tahoe.
I don't think I was in a state of mind to be representing Christ.
See,
at
is
that
it really
point.
The Tahoe driver's fault though? Because I know the Starbucks you're at. I saw you there in line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was here.
After someone
I was
stole
here
your
on
drink.
Right. Someone stole my drink. I was on time. Lisa was late, and the whole parking lot in that entire shopping center is marked compact. And I don't think anybody in the state of Colorado drives a compact.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind.
Yeah. I have like a Subaru Forester and it was dwarfed by the cars around me. I'm just like, what is that about? Yeah, the Tahoe was out of control.
Maybe that was the Mini Tahoe.
I'm sure it could have been. But I'm excited because I'm taking Monday off too, so I'm going to have a 4-day weekend in which I can celebrate Easter or Ishtar or whatever we want to say, Holy Week, whatever. But okay,
chocolate egg day.
But we were talking about this the other day because it's kind of fun, just the different associations that we have with Easter, and I think that's exciting. I mean, Steve had thrown some out. I didn't even know half of what he was talking about. So,
oh yeah, March Madness. It's always seems to be in the air. It's based on when Easter lands.
Why do people always have to take sports and tie them into things that are much more important? It's just like there's always like a sport connection for everything that's going on.
Well, it marks your seasons.
Well, it's a metaphor for the resurrection. That's something that some men... I'll stop right there.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, I think our producer was making a good point, too. He said, no, why ham? Why ham at Easter? Is that trying to look back to our Jewish roots and forget that the ham wasn't quite kosher?
I don't even eat. Usually, I don't even eat ham for Easter. I don't know. But when I'm with my sister and brother-in-law, we do Chinese takeout.
And this year, you can have green eggs and
eggs?
Ham, right?
Eggs. Oh, yeah. I like brunch. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Easter brunch,
but not like dyeing the eggs.
No, not so much. I always kind of got freaked out. You'd crack open the shell, and the dye leaked in. Mm-hmm. These lines of dark green on the mm-hmm.
Now, what's the point of the Ten Commandments Easter tradition? I mean, where's the...
Oh, every year. Charlton
where's
Heston.
Where's the Easter message?
Yeah. And the woman with the, you know, the Egyptian woman with the very silky, body-hugging Hollywood-style dress going, Moses, Moses.
Or the girls at the well who said, it's a man.
Oh, my goodness.
Do they
That's
still
like
play
most
that?
Accurate representation Isn't of scripture it? That most people will get, apparently. I remember I was doing this junior high, like, discipleship group, and we went and saw the Prince of Egypt. And when we did, we were talking about just that whole story afterwards, and one girl, I guess, had grown up watching the Ten Commandments, And she was like, yeah, I was really bummed, though, that they didn't have the part where his mom gets trapped under the wall, you know, or that we hadn't read about that portion in scripture. And I'm like, can we go back to the original text? Because not everything you see in the movie is in the Bible.
Just talking about the church context, obviously, that is a lot closer to the heart of Easter, what we're hearing at church. And I just found it interesting that USA Today would take the time to do a big article around the time of Easter with the question in the headline, has the notion of sin been lost? And they make the point in the article, they quote Mark Driscoll as saying, without an idea of sin, Easter is meaningless. But the same article is talking about how few mega pastors won't even talk about sin. And so a lot of people are going to be going to churches this weekend that don't mention sin. And they quote Al Mohler in the article saying, that's the linchpin doctrine of Christianity. It's this idea of Christ's death and resurrection giving us victory over sin. But I think it's kind of an interesting question that if sin's not in the context, what's the point of Easter? I mean, do we really have anything to overcome, or are we just good people applying great morals in our lives and enjoying our Easter specials and big chocolate bunnies?
To the reflection in the mirror, a piece I thought I'd never see. Every day I know my future's getting clearer, with mercy standing next to me.
As most of you know, last week we had Kurt Bruner in the studio with us talking about spiritual formation and how we can become more and more like Christ. That discussion went on quite a while, and so we certainly want to present to you this week the remainder of that conversation that we had with Kurt. So here we are with Kurt Bruner.
Spiritual formation is a lifelong process, all right? But I think it begins, for the people you're describing, it begins, for all of us, it begins with a recognition of the context within which we're living, and that is we're on a slope, we're prone to roll downhill. What disciplines am I going to begin to move me uphill towards what I'm made for? It's going to be different for every individual. There are normal paths of getting there, and it is in the context of community. And A, pursue your primary community, which is establishing your own home and such, but also live in community. And Lisa's example that she shares is a good one. If you're one who's inclined to say, I'm becoming actually more self-centered because I'm finding myself isolating more, I'm withdrawing from relationships because they're a pain in the neck or whatever it is, that's probably a sign that you're allowing yourself to accelerate the downhill.
So what, get a roommate? I mean, make it practical for the listeners who are saying, okay, my brother plays one of these games that I don't know what they are. Lisa and I are kind of like, whoa, what are these things? My brother plays these games.
You play Monopoly.
Right. 10 hours a day. Or what if somebody listening knows someone in the situation? What can they do? What are the practical nuts and bolts?
That's a tough one, because the only thing you can do is really, if they're an adult, you can educate them on what's going on, you know. Help them understand what's happening to their brain, so on and so forth. But you really can't force anything on them, you know. But for the individual themselves who says, listen, I don't want to be someone who rolls downhill my whole life in these categories, then they need to ask themselves some pretty hard questions. Number one, are you the 90% or whatever the statistics is that are called to the main path, which is marriage and parenthood? Then that's your primary focus right now. Get busy on it, whatever that means and however that means, and buy books and read boundless articles. Do whatever you can to start some initiative there. If you legitimately feel like, well, maybe I'm not in that category, then, okay, where do you begin to lay your life down for others? It doesn't mean you have to get a roommate that irritates you, you know, but it might mean that you get into the community
service.
Of faith and you say, hey, where can I serve in a way that really is beyond my comfort zone? Or that is a role of humble service rather than, hey, I really want to be on the platform, whatever it might be. I think it means stepping into the fire, stepping into the crucible of, hey, I want to be better than I am, and I want to be more than I am. I want to be what I'm made for. And what does that look like for you? We can't say that, you know.
Well, I think it seems that the whole, you know, just in listening to you, Kurt, the primary problem is that we as single young adults have just been anesthetized to this even being an issue. I mean, I would think in sitting around chatting with my friends, most of us probably would assume that we're in community and would assume, well, you know, I'm going to church and I'm in my singles group and I'm doing, you know, I teach Sunday school maybe or whatever. But I think it comes back to I think it comes back to what you said about having people who are really, you know, speaking into your life and, you know, rubbing you the wrong way or whatever you, what do you, whatever you need to have happen in order for that to, you know, and with singles, it has to be done intentionally in that sense. Because, for example, the whole power of story, you know, I think to myself, well, wow, for as many times as I sin in any given day, I can probably count on one hand the times in the last year where someone has confronted me on a sin. You know, and I just think we're, and this is probably applicable to everyone, you know, how many times are you really going after people and really helping them in their spiritual formation through accountability, through confrontation, you know, whatever, and the same thing being done, you know, in a reciprocity in that sense. So I don't know. It's just so, it's so tricky to think of how we're going to do that intentionally and to be part of story.
Well, and there's also a, you know, lighten up. Don't be so intense about it. You know, I mean, come on. God is orchestrating things. Are you responding in obedience to what he's orchestrating is part of this. It's not a, boy, I got to go live in a commune with people I can't stand, you know, because then I'm really.
You got to start wearing shoes and walk around.
Yeah, I mean, let's not be uptight about it. I mean, most of you. Bottom line is most of people in this life season, it really, they've got to start by wrestling with the, am I pursuing family or not? I mean, that's bottom line. Mm-hmm. If I really don't feel called to that, which is a small percentage of people, then there's a whole nother range of issues. But again, it's not about hanging out with people that rub me the wrong way. It's about serving people that are the least and the lost.
So you're saying opportunities are probably already out there in front of them.
If you sat down with any pastor of any church and said, I just feel like I ought to be serving somewhere that stretches my comfort zone, I guarantee a list will emerge very quickly of opportunities. You say, well, you know, that's really not up to the standards of what I was hoping for. That's probably the perfect opportunity for you then, because it's really a matter of humbling ourselves and being formed spiritually to the image of Christ. It's a very counterculture message, I realize. And if I was 20, 21 listening to this, I'd say, man alive, I got to turn the dial real quick. This isn't what I want, but it is what we're called to.
Well, it's kind of like the find yourself by losing yourself, right?
Absolutely. When Jesus said, you will find your life by losing it, which is one of the most nonsensical statements in all of Scripture, until you actually lose your life to something and you realize, wow, what I found is incredible. And guess what I found? I have four children. I found that I'm on vacation. I'm carpooling them, you know, here, there, and every place to see their old friends because we used to live here in town. That's not what I want to be doing. I want to be sitting at Starbucks, you know, talking to Stephen Candace Waters. But I'm not doing
that.
That's
what we want to be doing. Kurt, do you see that in the young adults in your church? Do they confront each other on their sin? Because, you know, my wife tells me my sin all the time. But do you see that among the young adults and singles in your church?
I don't see it, but I don't know that if you encourage people to do it, that it would play out in a very healthy manner.
Marriage was designed,
you're laying your life down for each other, and that's what you're
called to. You love each other.
You know, two become one. When it's just, man, you get on my nerves, and let me tell you about your bad breath and so forth. I'm not sure that it's going to play out the way we would hope.
Man, do I have a list here.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, it's just like, you know, part of me is just like, oh, man, you know, how are we going to do this? Because it's just, you know, to go and challenge singles with that who are already probably feeling generally alone, you know, and to say, stop hanging out with your friends, air quotes here, stop hanging out with your friends and going to movies where you're just living vicariously through them anyway. That's your community, pseudo community, whatever. Now go and do service and go minister to the least of these. Well, that feels kind of isolating to do that.
Well, plug into a home. I mean, connect with a young family.
Yeah.
And make friends with people who are your age, who are married with kids, and with the older people in your church. I mean, we've talked about mentoring so much, but I think that that concept of intergenerational relationships can really go a long way to providing a healthy environment for then feeling safe enough to say, you know, I'm worried that maybe I'm selfish. Do you see that in me? Or I'm struggling with you know,
don't even ask them if they see it in you. It is in you, and you know it is.
Right.
So then get into the context to refine yourself.
You have to be open to that. I mean, the single has to be open to it. See, because getting back to that point, I just think that, you know, it comes naturally in a marriage, but it's so unnatural, I think, when you're single, to be that open, to have someone come to you in that manner and say, oh, you know, this is what I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, and have you ever had one of those relationships where someone comes up to you and they want to become your accountability partner and so forth, and you get the creeps?
Yeah.
Because some of that kind of stuff happens. I worry that that becomes yet another step in the narcissistic, hey, I need you to make me a better person, mm-hmm.
yeah.
type of relationship. No. Just lay your life down for other people and don't worry about whether you're being conformed to the image of Christ. Just be conformed to the image of Christ.
Well, I remember the first accountability group that I was in after the whole Promise Keepers movement really brought it to the surface. And we were sitting around with a bunch of guys, and most of us were doing limited information. We really guarded what we share. And then the one guy shared everything. And I remember all the group looking at him and going, well, you're a freak.
And
we didn't know what to do with it. Yeah. You know, at least in marriage, there's a little bit more of a structure of what you do with this stuff that surfaces.
And if you've got a relatively healthy relationship with your parents and you're still single, they love you more than anyone else. Yeah. They'll be honest with you. You know, if you're not, you know, so prideful that you get ticked off every time they do.
It's that love that creates the buffer that's so essential, I think, for feeling safe enough to do any of this.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, Christ was the ultimate in love. So when he confronted someone, it was never just this, you know, naked confrontation. It was always in the context of love.
Although when he called them snakes in the grass, that was kind of, I'm sure, didn't feel very loving.
Or whitewashed self-accursion.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and in the context of day-to-day relationship and experience too. Mm-hmm. Because I was I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, everyone just thinks I'm awesome. And and I mean, I am, but
I was just thinking,
but it just makes me realize how, you know, it's so the family that I do have, you know, which I don't live near currently, when I'm around them, you know, some more chinks in the armor come out because they know a lot more about me. Whereas when I'm just putting my PR self forward, it's a whole different story. And I can't do wrong. So I think it is an intentionality for singles to come.
I think part of what we struggle with in this whole discussion of spiritual formation, what does that mean? And it even came up here. Is, yeah, but practically, what do I do? Because I think we are in a culture, a church culture, that is used to, okay, here's the principle, here are your three action steps. Mm-hmm. But being conformed to the image of Christ isn't so much about three action steps as about a recognition throughout your life that I am moving downhill unless I intentionally move uphill. And guess what? It happens every single day. It's a whole new circumstance every day. I was just arrogant and prideful in a situation I didn't even know I was going to encounter today. You know, no one could have spoken that into my life. But if I have a framework, I recognize my goal is to adopt the disciplines that move me there, then I think it changes your perspective when you hit those moments. I hope it does. And it's hard, lifelong work. And it'd be great to have a partner as you're on the journey. So,
God of Abraham, Lion and the Lamb, I have known you. Story has been told through the days of old, and I have known you.
For today's culture segment, I am with Brad Wilcox. Brad, this is actually going to be an interesting culture segment for us. We're not talking about movies or albums or video games or anything like that. Instead, we're going to talk about some research. Woo! All right. Brad is actually assistant professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. He is the author of Soft Patriarchs, New Men, How Christianity Shapes Fathers and Husbands. And he is on a brief visit here to Focus on the Family. I heard him speak this morning on some pretty fascinating research that's out there related to families, specifically men, but I think that plays into the roles of women within families and within the church as well. So, Brad, welcome.
Thank you for being
here. All right. I just want to start out by asking you, Brad, give us a little summary. I mean, I thought what you talked about this morning was pretty fascinating. Give us a summary of that research and how it came about and really what your goal is in that whole project.
Sure. The book basically argues that religion domesticates men, that it makes men more attentive to the needs and ideals, the aspirations of their wife and their children. And I think some of the findings in the book would run contrary to what many of these sort of stereotypes are out there about how religion, particularly evangelicalism, affects men. I find, for instance, that evangelical church-going men are more likely to have happy wives, to have wives who don't experience domestic violence. So some of the things that I'm finding, I think, would run contrary to what we would expect, at least in the media, to hear about evangelical men. And the motivation here is just to really cast a kind of a spotlight on the impact that religion has on families around the U.S.
Okay. And I know you mentioned Promise Keepers kind of as a model. You opened up this morning with a quote from Tony Evans just about men needing to kind of reclaim their role within the home. How are you even seeing that play out in the churches today?
Well, I think that evangelical churches have actually done a pretty good job over the last 20 years of reaching married men with kids and encouraging them to take their roles more seriously, to sacrifice, you know, for their families, to think about what would make their wives happy, and to, you know, change their behavior in ways that are, you know, they're helpful for their families. So I think on that front, churches have done a fairly good job of, you know, speaking to the men who are, you know, married with kids in the pews. I think, of course, there are challenges, though, for churches in terms of reaching men who haven't gotten to that stage in life that we can talk about.
Well, exactly. And as you know, our audience is primarily singles and certainly the younger demographic. So I'm going to actually call out both groups right now. Let's start with the men. It's interesting how, you know, I think research shows that single men, for the most part, unless they get married relatively young and then start having kids, they're either getting lost within our evangelical churches or they are leaving the church and they're out, you know, climbing on the weekends, they're out backpacking, whatever they want to do. So how do we avoid kind of this vicious cycle of the guys not being in church, but as a result of them not being in church, they're not even hearing these messages from mentors, from the strong men that they need to hear to kind of move them along that continuum of you know, adulthood and manhood? What really do they need to know?
Well, yeah, I think the churches have a really big challenge ahead of them because we are seeing an increase in the age of first marriage. People are delaying marriage or delaying, you know, parenting. And as you said, I mean, it's the men who are ones most likely to kind of be, you know, out of the church if they're not married with kids. And so on the one hand, I think the churches need to think about their message and their pastoral strategies. You know, oftentimes churches will devote a huge amount of energy and attention to youth groups. Mm-hmm. And then people, you know, turn, you know, 19 or whatever, and there's nothing there for them until they're married with kids.
There are no more pizza nights. So they're just
exactly. There's no more, you know, movie night on Friday or whatever. But anyways, the point is that I think the churches need to think about that stage between, you know, adolescence and marriage. And unfortunately, it's becoming more and more kind of longer and common among young adults, especially, you know, men. And that's a big challenge, I think, pastorally for churches to be creative about trying to draw in young adults who aren't married with kids, particularly young men. At the same time, though, I think that churches need to call men who are, you know, in church and who aren't yet married to think seriously about what their vocation is. And if they are called to the vocation of marriage and fatherhood, then they need to be challenged to be intentional about that, to be, you know, trying to figure out who would be a good, you know, wife for them and, you know, to pull the trigger, to, you know, to enter into that and not just kind of go in and out of one relationship after another. So I think there's a balancing act that has to take place between, on the one hand, targeting young adults, particularly men who aren't married, at the same time encouraging young men and young women to think seriously about what their vocational call is, and if they have a call to get married, then to get on with it.
Okay. And obviously, if the guys aren't in church, I mean, it's so valuable to have a pastor or someone in your life who can speak into that. But what do you see as the role of married couples, for example, who may have relationships with these guys outside of the church to, as I like to say, get on up in their business and tell them what's what and what they need to be doing? How can married couples start coming alongside single men?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, and this is, I think, true for both women and men, is to look a lot more skeptically at sort of young adult friendships. And to, I think oftentimes men and women are just comfortable kind of to hang out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that can be fine in some respects, but I think oftentimes it can lead to confusion about where, you know, relationships are heading. You know, you've got sort of, let's say, a man and woman who are friends, quote unquote, spending a lot of time together, but there's really no clear direction to their relationship. I think oftentimes one party can be kind of confused and hurt by this. And also they can kind of be, in a sense, drawn out of the marriage market, so to speak, because they think, oh, well, Joe is spending so much time with me, he must be interested in marriage. When in fact, Joe just likes her as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, you know, then say Mary is you know, out of the market, so to speak, and is not aware of the fact there may be David over there who's actually interested in her in terms of as a spouse. So I think having young adults being encouraged to be a lot more intentional about their friendships with members of the opposite sex and to, you know, to really try to figure out, you know, if they are called to marry, like who would make a good husband, who'd make a good wife. And to, as I said, to be encouraged to go down that path and not to leave people on, even unwittingly, you know, through kind of casual friendships.
Sure. Okay. I think you must be a member of the Boundless staff, Brad. If not, we better bring you on board. Okay. You're just full of info here. It's excellent. Okay. So now as my last question, we're going to call out the ladies. So ladies, you know that we are not without responsibility in this, and our attitudes certainly help shape kind of some of, you know, where the men are and kind of how this is playing out within the church as well. What would be your encouragement, Brad, to women kind of who are hoping for marriage and or hoping for, you know, hoping to see some of this leadership show up in the church and for men to really step up, both married and non?
Yeah, I think for women, the challenge is, once again, I mean, to be careful about their friendships, to set boundaries. And if they're unclear about, you know, where a guy is coming from, unfortunately, this day you have to ask, you know, and not just to imagine something's happening that may not be happening, because that can, you know, be a recipe for heartbreak for, I think, young women today. And I think to be thoughtful about how their choices with respect to career and with respect to education, higher education, you know, will, if they do think they're supposed to get married, you know, they need to be attentive to what kinds of places that they're putting themselves into in terms of, you know, work environments, educational environments, in terms of how that will help them or not help them, you know, find a husband, get married, have kids, etc. So I think, you know, being more intentional about their friendships, about their jobs, and about their educational paths can help young women if they're sense that they are supposed to be getting married pretty soon.
Okay. So what would you say to the woman who, for example, in relation to career, I mean, you know, I'm going to ask this question, who's going to come after you and say, well, Brad, I have to get a career. I have to do something with my life because obviously marriage doesn't look imminent. You know, I want to do something valuable. I want to be able to support myself. How can I do that and still keep myself open for marriage?
Well, I think that point is precisely right. I mean, because of the changing demographics in our society, I think women who are not married have to be attentive to their professional standing and status. And many women will combine marriage and some kind of professional career after they get married. So that's all, you know, I think to the good. But I think the issue is being attentive to how your professional persona may or may not bleed out into your relationships with men. And, you know, I think some women can be quite accomplished in the professional arena and they can be intimidating to men, you know, either at work or in a social context. And so I think it's a delicate, you know, balancing act of trying to, you know, be a smart, successful woman at the same time, you know, be in a sense, be open to, receptive to, you know, men out there who are interested in courtship of one kind or another.
Okay. Well, that's a whole Beth Moore series waiting to happen right there. Hello, ladies. Okay. Well, we'll have to unpack more of that later. Brad, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lisa. It's my pleasure.
For being a part of this. It's fantastic. Again, Brad's book is Soft Patriarchs, New Men, How Christianity Shapes Fathers and Husbands. Definitely go out and get a copy. The research and the information in there is fantastic. So thanks again. Opening up this week's Boundless Inbox, we have a question that was originally addressed to Candace, but we're actually bringing Candace and Steve into the studio to address this from both sides, both genders. We're actually going out of the country this time to Nigeria. This woman is a missionary in Nigeria. And as our engineer Dave has mentioned and reminded us, he assures us that this is not an email scam. There is no money requested in this question, merely advice, and at least we have that to give. So that's good to hear.
I think I've seen that email, the scam one, yeah.
I have not given, like, more than $10,000, so I feel okay about it.
And
so.
Have you gotten anything back?
Just a good fuzzy feeling. All right, well, here, let's listen from, we're just going to call her Amanda because she didn't provide her name. So she says, I am one of four single women missionaries working in Nigeria. We are all between the ages of 29 and 39. None of us, when going to the mission field, felt particularly called to singlehood. I think we would all admit to you that we desire very deeply to be married. But all of us heard God calling us to the mission field as full-time missionaries, and we all knew that there is very little opportunity on the mission field to meet a husband. Recently, the eldest in our group returned from furlough, and she went through a very difficult situation at home where she started dating a man who is not called to the mission field. She had to decide between marriage, something that she's wanted her whole life, and God's call to the mission field. She ended the relationship and returned to the field, but it was very difficult. I know that you write often about how women can put themselves in places and do things to find the husband that God has for them, especially if they have a strong desire for marriage. But what about us on the mission field? What do we do with our desire to be married?
Amanda, I think two things come to mind. First is that you sound a lot like the women who write, who say, I go to a really small church and I'm the only person, you know, between 25 and 40 who's single, and I just don't know any. I live in a small town, and so there's no place to go to meet men. And so in that sense, I'd say you have a lot of common ground with a lot of the women who write to Boundless. And to them, I would say the same thing that I want to encourage you with is that there's no reason for you to not pray boldly for a husband, that God is sovereign and he is almighty. And if he has given you a desire both to serve him on the mission field as well as to be married, there's nothing that would keep him from bringing you a husband, even in a remote place like Nigeria, maybe a small village in Nigeria. There are probably missionary conferences and other places where you can go to meet like-minded people, and that may be young available men. It may be members of certain missions boards who know of young available men. So all the advice of letting people know you still desire to be married and making sure that your circle of support knows that can really go a long way to helping you maybe meet someone. The added challenge, though, is that you have this strong calling on your life. And I think that as women, when we enter into a biblical marriage, we are required to fit in with our husbands, and really their vocation is what takes the lead in terms of who's doing the bulk of the working, who is doing the bulk of the earning. And when the husband has an opportunity for a job transfer, oftentimes, more often than not, it really is the situation, it works out where the wife needs to fit in with him and follow his lead. And when you have such a strong call yourself professionally, You have to ask, you know, God, are you asking me to lay down marriage because of my call to the mission field? Steve, what do you think?
I think there's a lot of hope for her in the promise that Christ made, that those who do leave spouses and children and family in this life, that God will reward, will give it back to them 10 times for their sacrifices if they really are following God. I think there is a lot of promise when God says, seek first the kingdom, and all these things will be added unto you. And I think there is hope there that she really is she is willing to lay that down to serve God. I think so often when people write to us and they're talking about not being sure about marriage, that it's so often isn't necessarily because they want to lay down their life in service, maybe as much as it is they want to hold on to the lifestyle they have. I think this writer is really trying to live the life that Paul talks about, of being fully expended in the gospel. And Paul was obviously willing to sacrifice the companionship of marriage and the blessing of children and all those things that go with it. But Paul was also the same one who says, we have the right to take a believing spouse with us. And so that's why it's not a surprise that so many missionaries are married and do have families and get to experience that as part of their life. We've watched a lot of the Voice of the Martyr specials, and just about every missionary they talk about is married and has a family. And so the two definitely aren't mutually exclusive, but obviously it's very important that the husband shares that call.
Well, and I think, Amanda, to your friend, I would just encourage her to say, God saw what the decision you made, and God saw you laying down your desire for marriage to go back to the mission field. And I believe that he is a God who rewards the faithful. And I think that was a great example of being faithful to the calling on your life, and just pray with you and for you that he will still bring about the desire of your heart in the area of family formation.
Great. Thanks so much, you two. That's it for this week's edition of The Boundless Inbox. Until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Again, and as always, please write to us with your questions at editor@boundless.org. We love to hear from you. And happy Easter to everyone. Have a fantastic week, and we will see you around next time.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org, focused on the family.